Reed versus the Commonwealth, Loretta Windrow. Just a reminder, I want to make sure that people remember to sign in on sign-in sheets outside.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And may I reserve 3 minutes?
3 minutes, yes, sir.
May it please the court, my name is Josh Goff. I'm honored to be here today on behalf of Michael Paul Reed. As the court knows, on at this point from the briefs, this is a quirky case arising out of Mr. Reed standing outside the New Bernew shipyard, alleging that his car had been towed and requesting the people loan him money in order for him to get his car back. And the issue that was presented at trial was whether this conditional loan of currency for a short period of time for a very specific purpose fulfills the element of obtaining money by false pretenses, that there would be a transfer not only of possession, which clearly occurred, but also of title to that money.
Since currency is bearer, it is a bearer certificate and it's fungible, doesn't it naturally follow that the title goes with possession?
My answer would be no, Your Honor, it doesn't. And I would address something in the Commonwealth's brief, which is almost sort of an interesting philosophical point of whether the paper currency itself has value. I think it's implicit, certainly there's no minimum value that's required for larceny, but it's implicit that in order to steal something from someone, the object must have some value. And Mr. Reed's position in the case is that the rectangular pieces of green paper have no value. They represent something that does have value. So what he allegedly took...
Money has no value.
The paper itself, if I brought rectangular pieces of green construction paper and tried to give them to you, Your Honor, you would declare them to be absolutely worthless. What Mr. Reed allegedly, or I guess did take from these people, represented something that had value, but what he took was the value of $280 or however many hundreds of dollars that he took. But it was not the pieces of paper themselves that had value. Those were completely worthless, the actual items that he took. He took, a representation of value from these people.
Wouldn't that argument fit back in the days when our currency was backed with gold? But now the value is in that paper.
Well, I would suggest that it's not, because if I asked a hypothetical person to exchange one $20 bill for another $20 bill, I think most people would say sure. They're interchangeable. They're the exact same thing.
But that doesn't mean they're of no value. I wouldn't change a $10 bill for a $20 bill.
Certainly not, because it represents, it is a manifestation of value, which I think is different than the actual pieces of paper having value. And I think the point that the Commonwealth made in its brief from the, 1800s type case that they cited was that you would have to exchange the exact same pieces of paper. And I don't think that is true. I don't think the law supports that is true. What Mr. Reed took was $280. And so whether he took that as an electronic exchange of money or gave them different bills, what he took was the value of that money. Not the pieces of paper are themselves absolutely worthless. They have no value.
But when it's created by the Treasury, doesn't that change things? If you created your own money, not only is that a crime in and of itself, but that becomes worthless paper unless you pass it off to someone that buys into it. When the Treasury creates it and makes it specially, doesn't that then make the value in that piece of paper alone and the denomination that's marked on its face?
Yes, Your Honor, it manifests value in that particular green paper and not my green construction paper. We know that the green paper that the Treasury puts out has value because they say so, but one piece of rectangular green paper has the exact same value as any of the hundreds of millions of other $1 bills or $20 bills that look the exact same.
And I know we don't deal with it in this case, but the collectors of the world would disagree with you on that, wouldn't they? That if you tried to hand me a George Washington in exchange for mine that is labeled a silver certificate, they're not going to represent the same value.
Well,
even though on the face they do.
I think this is where, again, we have to look, and the Commonwealth, from its brief, I believe, will agree with this. We have to look at the intent of the two people in question who gave this paper to Mr. Reed. What was their intent in transferring it to him? And I don't think any inference can be raised from the facts adduced in the record that they cared one way or the other whether they got that specific $20 bill or those specific denominations back. They wanted the value of that money back.
Plus more.
Plus more. And the record is pretty clear as well that this, and this is a key point if the court is inclined to decide this case narrowly rather than just declaring that all loans do not transfer title, this was a conditional loan. It was for a very specific, short-lived purpose, and that's evidenced by the fact that they rode around with Mr. Reed, who was a complete stranger to them, who was all but panhandling outside of the shipyard, asking them for money, and they rode from house to house, and in one case, Ms. Etienne's case, for hours. And Mr. Reed would go in a house, he would stay there, she had ample opportunity to leave, she did not leave.
Does false pretenses depend on the intent of the victim or the intent of the defendant?
My position is that in order to determine whether title is transferred, it depends on the intent of the victim, Your Honor. It's whether they intended to transfer title of whatever they're exchanging if the pretenses were in fact false.
Mr. Goff, if I give you a $50 bill and I expect a $100 bill in return for that, I've given you $50 and I want $100 back, have I not given you title to that $50?
It depends on the circumstances, Judge Attlee. If you said, Mr. Goff, I'm going to ride around with you to make sure I get my $100 back, I'm not going to leave your presence, and we're going to do all of this today in a short-lived period of time, my position would be, you clearly have not given me title to the money, and I would differentiate it from, for instance, the Jewel case, which was relied on at the trial court level by the Commonwealth, where that was more of a traditional loan type of situation where they exchanged documents, the individual, Mr. Jewel, got the money, and he was free to spend it however he wanted to. In this case, Mr. Reed was not free to spend his money however he wanted to. He did, if the court concludes that he used false pretenses, he did, in fact, spend the money how he wanted to, and at that point, he stole it. He committed a larceny of the money. If the court believes that his car was not towed and he took the money to perhaps to whatever he might have done with it, that was a larceny of the money. He stole it at that point because he did not have permission of the victims, the alleged victims in that case, to use the money for that purpose.
Now, if we assume for the sake of argument this was, in fact, just one big scam, do the victims of the scam really care what specifically he does with their money, or is that just a part of his story? Because they get sucked in by the sob story, but even more importantly than that, they get sucked in by the prospect of profiting on this situation. Do they really care what specifically he's doing with that money, or do they just care about making sure that they get more in return for their efforts?
My argument is stronger in Ms. Etienne's case. She was the first complaining witness who testified. She clearly did care. She talked in the record, and I can't cite the appendix number off the top of my head, but she talked in the record how she was a Christian, she was getting married, she was moved by Mr. Reed's story. She wanted to help him, I think she said, because she was a Christian. She, I would submit to the court, did care a great deal about what Mr. Reed did with the money. She wanted to help him. Now, Mr. Williams, I would submit the record's not as clear either way with him. He stood to make a little more profit than in Ms. Etienne's case, but the record is very clear that she gave that money for one purpose and one purpose only. That was for Mr. Reed to get his car back. And when and if he used the money for something other than getting his car back, he committed a larceny of her money. He stole her money. He did not have title to it. She made very clear she did not pass title to it. She gave it to him for a specific purpose, for a short duration of time, and she, in fact, stayed with him for hours to make sure that he did, in fact, use the money for that purpose. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Goff. Mr. Shanville?
May it please the court, Mr. Shanville for the Commonwealth. Primary issue in this case, I would agree with opposing counsel, primary issue is whether or not the victims in this case intended to transfer title to the money that they gave to Mr. Reed. So there are kind of two intents at issue in obtaining money by false pretenses. One is the defendant's intent to defraud, and then the second one is the victim's intent whether they intend to transfer only possession but keep back title for themselves, in which case that's more of a traditional larceny and can't be tried under obtaining money by false pretenses, or in cases whereas here the victims do intend to transfer not just possession but also title to that money to the defendant, in which case the defendant is properly tried for obtaining money by false pretenses and properly convicted for obtaining money by false pretenses. Now, I would dispute opposing counsel's contention on brief that this is a legal issue that has to be resolved de novo at this level. When we're talking about intent, we're talking about factual findings. And when we talk about what the trial court, the findings the trial court made as to the intent of the defendant to defraud, that's based on factual findings, and on review, they're reviewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth and only overturned if plainly incorrect. I would submit that the same standard of review applies here. That the question is, was it reasonable for the fact finder to conclude that these victims intended not just to give temporary possession of this money, but actually to completely give title to the money to the defendant and not get that money back? This question of intent to transfer title to money is not one that's been raised in Virginia, as far as I can tell, so it's again an issue of first impression as to intent to transfer money specifically. But the issue has been raised in many other jurisdictions, and those jurisdictions, as I've cited on brief, have rejected attempts to request this sort of per se rule that every time you give a loan of money, it's necessarily a transfer of only possession and not title. Or the converse has also been rejected as a per se rule that every time you give money as a loan, it's necessarily not giving, it necessarily is giving title. What courts have said is we don't need per se rules here. We need to allow the fact finder to determine based on the facts, based on the circumstances, what was the intent of the victims in this particular case. And I would submit that in light of the cases from other jurisdictions and viewed in light of the facts in this particular case, the testimony of the two victims here, that it was reasonable for the fact finder to conclude that these two victims intended to transfer not just possession, but also title to the money. The case of Welsh out of Illinois, it's an 1876 case. It's a bit old, but I would submit that that particular case gives one of the best overviews of the governing principles when it comes to whether or not a victim intends to transfer title to money, which is why I cited that case. If I could have found a more recent one that gave that good of an overview, I would have cited it. But Welsh talks about two scenarios in which a victim can give money to a defendant but not intend to transfer the title to that money, even though they do intend to transfer possession. So one scenario is where the victims intend to get back the very same dollar bills or the very same coins that they give to the defendant for a temporary purpose. So they, in Welsh, it has to do with a set of facts, a betting game. I'm not familiar with, I guess that game is not tried as often anymore these days. But in that case, money was put down as sort of a wager, and there was a thought that maybe the victims intended to receive back that same money that they put on the table as a part of the wager. And so there, possibly they weren't intending to transfer the title by putting the money down because they thought they would get the same money back. That obviously is not what occurred here. The victims intended to give the money to Mr. Reed so that he could give the money to the towing company to pay to get his car back. The victims were promised that they would get back some additional money, some different money that the defendant had in his car. But clearly they were not expecting or intending that they were going to go back to the cashier at the towing company and ask to get those exact same dollar bills back. So that takes this case out of that first prong of Welsh, which is a case where transfer of title would not occur. Secondly, the second scenario that Welsh talks about is this idea of availment. So a situation where someone gives another person money for a temporary time for limited purpose, but the victim intends that that money be used for their own personal benefit. So for example, if I'm at the movies with my wife and I say, honey, will you run out to the concession stand, take this $20 bill and buy a small popcorn for me? And you would need the $20 bill to buy the small popcorn. And she might, you know, take the money, go out and make the purchase for me and then come back and give me the popcorn. And that scenario, putting aside the fact that it's both of our money, but assuming it was only my money, in that scenario, I'm not intending to actually give her title to the money. I'm intending that she just carry it temporarily and have possession and then pass the title to the person operating the stand and the concession stand and purchase the popcorn for my own particular benefit. So then the question becomes, in this case, was there the victim's intent to create this sort of bailment situation where here, I'm going to just let you have this money in your possession for a temporary purpose, but go do this with it and then bring me back the proceeds or bring me back the original money that I'm giving to you. And it's something that from the victim's perspective is done for their own benefit. In this particular case, these victims did not approach Mr. Reed and say, hey, I've got this idea. I'd like to give you some money. I'd like you to go to this towing company. And I'd like you to pay the towing company, and then I want you to give me back even more money after the fact. This is not the traditional bailment type setting. So it was perfectly reasonable for the fact finder to conclude based on their testimony that they intended, they were tricked, and they hoped that at some point they would be reimbursed for this payment of money. But that they were giving money and intending to transfer possession and title to the money so that the defendant could use it for his own benefit, which was to get his car back from the towing company.
And it's your position that that intent is a matter of a question of fact, which can be proven through circumstantial evidence.
Correct, Your Honor.
As intent often must.
Correct, Your Honor. And I would submit that the fact that both of the victims in this case rode around with the defendant for some time, opposing counsel argues that that's evidence that they intended not to transfer title. I would submit that that's actually evidence that they did intend to transfer title and not just create some sort of bailment situation. If they had intended to keep title to the money for themselves until they got to the towing company and then pass title directly to the towing company, there was no need to hand the money over to Mr. Reed if they're going to ride around with them. They can wait till they get to the towing company and hand the money over directly to the towing company then. So I would submit the facts in this case support the reasonable conclusion, the reasonable fact finding that they intended to transfer title and possession, and thus Mr. Reed was properly convicted of obtaining money by false pretenses. Unless there are any further questions from the court, I will rest on my brief and ask the court to affirm.
Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Goff.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Just to address the last point that the Commonwealth made, at trial, and perhaps trial counsel should have done a better job than I was trial counsel.
But oh, hindsight is 20/20.
Perhaps gone one question further and asked the two alleged victims in that case, I mean, was that your money that you gave Mr. Reed, or was it Mr. Reed's money when you gave it to him? And I submit the inferences that one can draw from the record would be that both victims would have said that it was their money. Trial counsel did ask, you know, is it a loan? Was it a gift? They said, no, it certainly was not a gift. It was a loan. They stayed with them. It was a conditional loan to be used for one very specific purpose. And so if the court agrees with the Commonwealth that it is not a pure question of law, that there is a factual element to it, the inferences, even in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth in this case of what was presented at trial, was that the victims at no point ever intended that Mr. Reed lay ownership or claim to that money. They were attempting to help him and perhaps make a profit as a secondary motive as well, but their primary, I guess, reason that they gave him the money was to help him, at least at first.
Counsel, I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I assume you didn't find any out-of-state authority that reversed a conviction on this kind of a argument because the loan of cash did not transfer ownership?
No, Your
Honor. Okay.
How would you address Mr. Chandeville's almost final point that they loaned the money to the defendant for him to use for his own purpose in hopes of getting not only that equivalent of money back but additional money?
Well, I think the court has to look at the record and certainly draw inferences from the record that was made. And the record was clearer in Ms. Etienne's case than it was in Mr. Williams' case. But she said that her intent was to help Mr. Reed. And to address what opposing counsel said, if they intended it just to give it straight to the loan or the towing company, they would not have given the money to Mr. Reed when they went to the ATM. The record is clear about that. They went to the ATM and they gave Mr. Reed the money, then they rode around with him. And I would submit they rode around with him, A, to make sure that he did what he said he was going to do with the money, and B, they wanted to get their money back, perhaps with a profit. But if the court, again, is inclined to decide this case narrowly, this is a quirky case, and perhaps not necessarily extremely precedent-setting, but in these particular circumstances, the fact that the alleged victims rode around with Mr. Reed, stayed with him, gave him money only after he gave his sob story, for lack of a better word, about his car being towed, they clearly did not intend that he have free use of the money, that he owned the money and do with it as he saw fit. And so for those reasons, I would ask the court to overturn the two convictions on obtaining money without false pretense.
Can I ask you one final question?
Yeah, sure.
Are you asking for a per se rule that a loan can never transfer ownership of money, or are you just saying in the context of these facts?
I'm asking first and foremost for a per se rule. If the court is not inclined to do that under these particular facts, I submit that the conditional loan that was made here does not fulfill the element of obtaining money by false pretenses that title has.
Thank you. Very well. We'll step down and brief counsel.